Only retreat or surrender or death.
Well, that's an easy choice for us, Arcadian. Spartans never retreat. Spartans never surrender.
Go, spread the word. Let every Greek assembled know the truth of this.
Let each among them search his own soul.
While you're at it, search your own.
This is the Warrior Mind Podcast, and I'm your host, Greg Swanson. Podcasting from beautiful Bend, Oregon, the Warrior Mind Podcast is a personal empowerment series that gives you the information required to develop a mindset of a warrior, maximize your human potential, and achieve peak performance.
Over 4 years and going strong, with over 300,000 downloads from over 9 countries and 5 continents, I'm Greg Swanson, and this is the Warrior Mind Podcast. To find out more about Warrior Mind Coaching and Training, please visit us at www.warriormindcoach.com. Greetings, everyone. Hope you are doing well. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, welcome. I appreciate you taking the time. If this is a repeat, you've heard me before, welcome back. I appreciate you taking the time and coming back, and I hope that you derive some benefit out of the podcast. I've been getting some wonderful feedback on the podcast and on my training courses on how they are helping individuals. So I am very pleased that these words are making an impact on people's lives. Before we get into this episode of the podcast, just wanted to remind you again that I've taken the book, Develop the Mental Strength of a Warrior, and converted it into an online training course. This course goes through the book, and you also get the book as well. And you can find more about it at www.warriormindtraining.com. Well, I have another great interview for you today. This late lady is just amazing, Joan Sotkin. Joan is the expert when it comes to understanding how emotions basically learned in childhood affect a person's earning capacity. That is, the emotions that they learn tied to their relationship with money. She's been making her living online for well over 20 years, helping individuals and entrepreneurs experience freedom from struggle personally and professionally when it comes to money and finances. So, wonderful topic to talk about. We need to make money. Let's just face it. We have to have money to live. Money may not buy happiness, but I tell you what, it certainly doesn't hurt. So, if we're struggling with money, Joan goes into this and talks about how our emotions affect our relationship with money. It's a great, great interview, and you can find more about Joan at prosperityplace.com. I have a link for her website where this podcast is posted. So with that, sit back, relax, take some notes, and enjoy the interview. Joan, thank you so much for joining me on the Warrior Mind Podcast. I am so excited that you've taken time and about your book that you read and sharing the information. This is just going to be a valuable, valuable time for all the listeners.
It's great to be here, Greg.
Joan, so there's so much to ask you because it's about money, it's about emotions, but let me just start off with, how did your personal experience, how did your life affect what you do now?
Okay, so I came from a family that had a lot of money issues. My father was a compulsive debtor, and there was always a lot of money stuff going on in the house, although we didn't, have rational talks about it. And my father went bankrupt, and it was just difficult. And at the same time, my father had these rules for us because we were the only Sotkins in the whole country. And he was a little nuts. And so he would have all these rules for Sotkins, one of which was Sotkins don't feel. So if you can imagine being brought up with that. So I was expressing my feelings through my physical disorders and I'm going to therapy and all sorts of things. And when I started going to Debtors Anonymous, I learned that there was a connection between money and emotions. And when I went to Codependents Anonymous, I learned how to fix my emotions. And just Once I learned that emotions were okay at Codependence Anonymous, they would clap every time I told them how I felt. I just decided I really had to learn about emotions, and spent a lot of time in meditation as well as spending time with my own emotions and learning how to express them. This was in the 70s and 80s. So it was before people were talking about emotions a lot. And I really began to see the connection between money and emotions. And then in the mid-1980s, I created a business called Jones Stones, Jones Crystals. I was selling quartz crystals and stones for healing and meditation. And I wound up having those stones in 600 stores. I was mailing out 50,000 catalogs at a time and was making, in today's money, $50,000 a month, and wound up going bankrupt.
Wow.
So, and what happened was, just as I had reached the peak where I was mailing out 50,000 catalogs at a time, my father died. And I really came to see eventually that the loss of my father was too difficult to deal with. It was easier to deal with the loss of my business. But I really began to see all the emotions that went into that. And it was very difficult, but certainly a learning experience. And as a result of that, I didn't know how to manage cash flow. And that was one of the big problems, because I had all that money coming in. And when I went to the bank and said to them, I've reached my level of incompetence, they thought it was funny and sent this consultant who said, well, you just have to borrow more money from family and friends. And I said, that's not my story. And I declared bankruptcy. And that's why I do the work I do today, so that I can help people understand both the internal and the external factors that one has to be aware of when one is doing a business.
Wow, that is fantastic. And that fits so well into one of the models I use in coaching folks, is that thought leads to feelings or emotions, you could say, and those emotions lead to an action, and those actions create a result. So what I'm hearing is that there's a lot, I mean, emotions are very, very deep in what we do. How would you describe that connection between the thoughts and the emotions and money?
Well, I say almost what you do. I say that beliefs, we have beliefs that lead to thoughts that lead to emotions, and the emotions are the bridge between our internal and external world. And the emotions inform our behaviors, and that's what affects our life outcomes.
So if somebody is struggling with money, I guess there's several ways, right? They could have money and not keep it, and then they could want it and not get it. And we'll work with that one first, because people are – the belief is they're struggling with money, and I'll put that in quotes. But what would be some of the first steps that a person could take to evaluate their beliefs or their thoughts or their feelings on, you know, they're looking at their bank account, it's not increasing, they may have started a job or a business, and they just can't get clients, and they're just struggling. What would be some of the first things that they could take an assessment of?
Okay, so the system that I use is recognize, release, and replace. And the first thing you have to do is recognize what you're experiencing. Now, you don't have to have an emotional vocabulary in order to do this. So let's take the situation where you're looking at your bank balance. Very few people look at their bank balance and go, wow, look at that. You know, it's usually.
Or they go, wow, look at that.
That's not it. It's more like, oh, look at that. Okay, so when you're looking at your bank balance, notice whether you feel contracted or expanded. Because that contraction is the feeling. That is the kinesthetic awareness in your body mind of what's going on. And then you say to yourself, well, when in my early life did I feel similar feelings? Because you don't start having feelings when you're in your 30s or 40s or 50s. These feelings start in the first week of your life. And if you're feeling contracted, and eventually you get to the place where you realize you're feeling ashamed, In my book, Build Your Money Muscles, I have a connection. I show the connection between certain financial themes and emotional patterns. And if it's shame, it's never about the money. Money is neutral. It's just a bunch of numbers on a piece of paper or in a computer. And whatever feelings you're bringing to your money are feelings that you learned early in your childhood. And once you understand that, then you can recognize the feeling, release the feeling using a number of techniques, and replace the feeling. What would I rather feel when I'm looking at my bank balance? And the bank balance doesn't have to be $100 million or $1,000 or $10,000 for you to feel good about it. It's a matter of feeling good about yourself, because it has nothing to do with money.
Interesting, interesting. Because money is such a, it's like money and religion, right? Those topics, you just, people have, they polarize people. And, you know, I've heard it, and I think some of my listeners might hear it. And as you said, money is nothing. It's just a bunch of numbers. But how do we get so attached emotionally to money?
Well, it's not that we're attached emotionally. It's that we have no other way to express the emotions. Emotions, by their nature, need to be expressed. John Bradshaw used to say emotions, energy in motion. And if they're not expressed, they get stuck in our system. Emotions don't happen in your head. They're actually neuropeptides, these biological molecules that attach to receptors in your cells. And they get released from those receptors when you express them. So if you don't express them, it's like you have all these molecules of anger building up in your body system, and they have to be released. So once you're able to release the emotions, you no longer have the need to create the life situation that allows you to feel the unexpressed emotions.
Interesting. So how is it that people assimilate or associate money with emotions? I mean, we have a lot of things that we could attach or identify emotions with, but it seems like money is a main object.
Because we deal with it every day. And money is a symbol of relationship. Money is energy passing between two people or entities. And it's a symbol of relationship. Because when that energy passes between two entities or two people, it's creating a relationship. And how you deal with money is how you deal with a relationship with yourself and others. That's all that money is about. So the emotions around money are really the emotions that you have in relationships.
Wow, interesting. And your book, which is a fantastic book, Build Your Money Muscle, I mean, it is just amazing. It goes through some of those steps. But you talk about relationships with money, as if money, you can have a relationship
you
with
can.
Money. Can you go?
If you can imagine money is a being, it's this very innocent being that's just not numbers. And it's asking you to take care of it, because money doesn't take care of itself. Money by itself is going to flit here and flit there, and it has no discipline whatsoever. And how you deal with money is how you deal with your relationship with yourself and others. So if you're very tight, if you're very contracted, if you're very shy, if you're very afraid of people, You're not going to draw in much money, because you're closed to relationship. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. You mentioned one word there, shy, and many people associate shy with introverts. And if you could talk about that, you know, introverts and extroverts can be very abundant, and that it's not shy and contracted, but the difference between those two, right? Because you were saying shy and contracted.
It's funny, because when the word shy came out of my mouth, I've never used that word out loud before. And it's like, oh, where did that come from? But it, that, you know, because I'm an extrovert, and so to me, someone who is shy appears to me to be contracted. So that was merely my perception, my projection. So let's kind of erase that.
But right.
Let's look at something else. Under-earning is a common problem that you alluded to before. So what does under-earning represent? Well, this was one of my major ahas. I think that what we need more than anything else in our lives is the feeling of connection and touch. And under-earning is the result of touch deprivation, as is over-earning. People who never have enough money and they just have to keep making more and more and more, and they're not any happier than they were when they had hardly any. That's over-earning. Under-earning and over-earning, the feeling behind that is the feeling of longing, which comes from very often touch deprivation.
Wow, I've never heard that part before, and that makes sense. So would you take that touch deprivation back to childhood type issues, or would it be more what's going on right now, or both?
Absolutely childhood. No, because whatever's going on in your life today is a result of the emotions you developed early in childhood. So if you didn't bond well with your parents, mm-hmm. If there's any kind of abuse or neglect, alcoholism, drug addiction, any mm-hmm. kind of emotional abuse, any of that stuff, then there was a lack of touch and appreciation and feeling loved. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that feeling, you know, because children naturally need to be touched, there's a feeling of longing that starts. Well, longing for money is the same feeling as the longing for touch.
Wow. And the longing for touch, and to go back to using the word relationship, right? If you don't have a healthy relationship with your parents and you're longing for touch, it would make sense that you don't have a healthy relationship with money as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. And with yourself, what I looked at, I was very touch deprived. My father used mm-hmm. to say when she was 6 weeks old, she drooled on me and I never touched her again. And that was true. And so, and my mother wasn't a good toucher either. So there was not a whole lot of physical contact with anyone in my family. So I was in fact touch deprived. And I realized, and not that long ago, that the persona that I developed was kind of aloof, which allowed me to keep in this position where people didn't want to touch me. You understand?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I was protecting myself. Better push you away instead of wanting you to touch me and you don't touch me. So I was somewhat aloof. And I said to myself, you know, is it true that I'm still touch deprived? I said to myself, how do people, adults, touch each other? Because we don't, other than a perfunctory handshake or a hug hello, we don't touch each other much in our culture. So I mm-hmm. realized that we touch each other by listening, by smiling at each other, by handing each other money. So I started looking around, and I have a friend who's not very touchy either. And one day, I when I was going through this process, we go to this spiritual gathering together, and he gave me such a warm hello. And I said, that's his way of touching me. I am not letting myself feel touched because I don't know how. So what I did, and I said, no, I've got 10,000 people on my mailing list, and I looked at all the ways that people are actually touching me. But I wasn't feeling touched. So I would get into bed at night and I would remember the things that went on during the day. People that said something nice to me, or I had a new coaching client, and I would imagine that I was being touched. And I would try to generate that feeling within me. And I do that every single night, and it's amazing how my business changed. It was remarkable because suddenly I was present with what people were actually giving me.
Wow. So, you know, I'm certified in NLP and some other things, but what you just said was very fascinating, is that you were being touched, but what I heard, and please correct me if I didn't interpret this correctly, but you weren't allowing the feeling of being touched. And at some level, that not allowing, there was a payoff for that.
It was it was protection.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, awesome. But then once you started to, at night, go into the feeling that you let yourself, you allowed yourself to feel that feeling, then your business and other things started to change.
Exactly. And my relationships with other people have changed because I saw that in their way, they were loving me. And I started thinking about, you know, how my parents actually showed their love, and they used to do it with money.
Right.
And so for me, it had a certain negative, being handed money almost had a negative thing, because I wanted to be loved, not handed money.
Right.
My whole family were Capricorns, and I used to say we were all Capricorns. We never touched each other. We just handed each other $20 bills. And that was pretty much it. And so it's really a matter of perception. It's like if you look at your bank balance and it says $1,000, you're seeing that as a lot of money or not enough money is merely perception.
Right.
Okay, so my perception was that I wasn't being touched. And I had to open myself to seeing and feeling that I was being touched.
Oh, man, that's fascinating. So, you know, you kind of discussed a little bit about the relationship with money and the feelings of not being touched. What other emotions do people, I don't want to say act out, but kind of act out through money?
That's the right word.
Okay.
And in my book, I outline the five main feelings that people act out through the money, which is aloneness. And that's that feeling of separation, aloneness, anger, deprivation, shame, and a sense of being trapped. So if you're dealing with debt, and debt is neutral, it's just like money, it's neutral. If you're feeling burdened and trapped by your debt, that feeling of trapped started early in childhood when you were 2 years old and they wouldn't let you do what you wanted to do. And you had no power over the people around you. So that's a feeling of trapped. And these feelings that start in early childhood, like the longing and trapped and deprived and alone, there's so much a part of us that we don't even realize they're there.
Wow. So I have this concept of I call it a complacent zone. And there is a lower part of mental support and an upper part of mental resistance. And the philosophy or my premise is that we go through this, and when we get to rock bottom, you know, we start taking action. And then when we get towards this mental resistance, we kind of find excuses and stop taking action. And it's very evident in money, right? People will start generating X amount of money. They'll get to a certain point and then will say it, they sabotage themselves. What is some of the things that you have found that people, why does that happen, that they start to sabotage themselves? They're making some good money and then either they stop doing what they're doing or they spend more than they make. Whatever it is, they're just not able to hold on to that.
Okay, first of all, I never use the word self-sabotage.
Okay.
Self-protection. The problem is one's identity. And we have a self-concept, a self-identity. And when things start changing, it's a threat to three things: our identity, how we perceive ourselves. So if I've been doing this low self-image thing for a long time, and suddenly people are handing money hand over fist, that goes against who I am. So I'm going to push it away. It also affects our relationship with our family of origin, our position in our family of origin, and our position in our peer group. Our greatest fear is being left alone. So if you have a peer group where you have a certain position in the peer group, Everybody might be just as broke as you are, or you're the low person in the peer group. The minute you start changing your position, you're changing your relationship with the others in your peer group.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to the fear of being left out and alone, so that you're going to go back to where you were so you can feel connected. That's, remember, that feeling of connection and the feeling of touch are the two basic things. Despite Maslow's hierarchy, those are the two that I think are the most important. And so we make really stupid mistakes and make stupid decisions because of this need we have to feel connected. And so it's connected to ourself, first of all, because if I perceive myself to be a less than person and someone is handing me big piles of money, it goes against who I am. I don't know who I am anymore. And I talk about how when you start going through these changes and making more money, you get what I call the moving stupids. When you move from one house to another and you really want to be in the new house, but you get really stupid. You bump into walls, you don't know where anything is, you lose your wallet, you lose your keys, because change is disorienting.
Right.
And you have to be willing to go through this tunnel of transition. You have no idea how long the tunnel is. It usually takes about 3 months or so. But also, a lot of people who start making more money haven't developed the financial skills they need to manage the money.
Mm.
A lot of the new age thinking, you know, remember, I had a crystal business, so I'm queen of the new age, right? But thinking and believing doesn't manage the money. You have to know how to take care of your money. Money goes to people who love and take care of it, just like people. And you have to learn financial skills. And when people say, well, I'm not very good with money, I say that's because you never tried, or you don't have to be good with numbers anymore. You just have to be good with data entry, and you have to be willing to do it. You may not have the discipline, but if you want to be wealthy, you have to know how to count your money and how to manage cash flow. That's the piece that's also missing, where people don't learn how to manage cash flow.
Wow. So in your book, you talk a lot about goals, and managing cash flow can be a goal of some sort. But where would a person start where they go, manage money? I need to get money first to manage. And they do now, have money.
Now, everybody who's listening to this show has at least $100.
Yes.
They have a computer.
Yep.
Right? They have a way to make money, or they're looking for a way to make money. There are so many ways to make money in this internet world. I just posted a course on Udemy.com. And
I saw that. Congratulations.
Thank you. And in a month, I made close to $1,000. And so I'm going to do another course on Udemy. Did it take time? Yes, but the first one takes a lot of time. I learned how to do it, and I stuck with it until I got it done. And now I'm going to do others. I'm also going to start doing stuff on Amazon, Fulfilled by Amazon, FBA. And there's just, I love to sell crystals and stones, so I'm going to put stuff together on Amazon.com. I mean, there's just so many ways of making money. If someone's not making money, it's because they're holding themselves back because their self-concept is one of, I'm not a person who makes money. So you know, you have to make the decision that I want to make money, and I'll learn the skills that it takes in order to make and manage money. It's that simple.
Right. So would you say then, if somebody is, let's just say, making minimum wage and they're barely scraping by, and we say, and they listen to the podcast and they talk about managing money and they say, I wish I had money to manage. Would your advice be to start to manage what you have at some level and then start making more?
Yes.
Okay.
Get a little notebook, one of those little spiral notebooks, you know, that you can put in your pocket or your purse, and write down everything you spend and everything that comes in. Because something's coming in. It's not, even if it's from food stamps, you know, you're
right.
Money coming in. You write down everything you spend. That is developing a relationship with money. Because money likes to be counted. it. Right. That's the thing. It likes you. Just count your money. It'll love you back.
Now, you know, I'm also very big into fitness as well. And it's almost like keeping a food diary, right? When you start to manage your food, you're managing your weight, which is the result of the food. And it sounds very similar.
Right. I have not eaten sugar in August. It will be 43 years.
Wow.
Honest to God, not one little bit of sugar has passed my lips. Because I was a suicidal depressive, aside from being broke all the time. I was a suicidal depressive for 15 years on all sorts of psychotropic drugs. And this doctor, who was so far ahead of his time, said to me, if you stop eating sugar, you won't be depressed anymore. And he listed the foods I should not eat. So it was high carbohydrate foods. It was kind of a modified Atkins diet. Within 2 days, I wasn't depressed anymore.
Wow. Wow. And you mentioned, I think, on your Facebook page a couple of weeks ago about with fitness and health, and I'm going to tie this back to money, you know, cure versus prevention. You know, why don't we prevent it instead of curing things? So how can you relate cure versus versus prevention to money?
Well, you have to do with money, you have to do kind of both at the same time. You have to cure your current situation, which means looking at your emotions as well as your money.
Right.
By taking care of that, you're going to prevent problems in the future. But also cash flow, managing cash flow prevents future problems. I have a cash flow spreadsheet that I make available to people at prosperityplace.com/spreadsheet. And it's a video that shows you how to use it. It's something I created for myself because I never was able to use the things in Quicken and QuickBooks, and because they're assuming you know how much money's coming in.
Right.
Yeah. And so I made up this cash flow spreadsheet. And my clients who begin using this thing, I often work with them to get it going. They say it's changed their life. Husbands and wife get along better because they can look at the spreadsheet and say, okay, this is what's coming in. And this is what we have to pay. And this is what we can't pay this month. And if we can't pay it, let's see if we can get an extension. Or I don't have to pay this right away. I can pay that. It's a matter of moving the money around the board. And for an entrepreneur, this is an absolutely essential skill.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that very well. And can you talk about, I mean, again, in your book, you talk about goals. I'm very big on goals. And many people have, quote, tried goals and say they don't work, but it's actually my belief is that they're not working the goals. Can you talk about how important goals are as far as, one, changing your relationship with money and then actually acquiring more of it?
Well, I probably do goals a little differently than you. First of all, I think you have to have realistic goals. And I don't do the whole smart goals thing. And if you're making $1,000 a month, go for $1,100 a month. Small, moving up the ladder slowly. And I prefer setting feeling goals.
Mm.
How do you want to feel? And do you know how to feel that? If you want to feel satisfied and you're always dissatisfied, then no matter how much money you make, you're still going to be dissatisfied because that's your habit. So if you have a goal of feeling satisfied, you have to teach yourself how to feel satisfied. How's
wow,
that?
That's great.
How's that for
and in your book, Building Your Money Muscle, that goes over some of those exercises, correct?
I'm not sure if that one's in there or not. I mean, the book has been around a while.
And right.
I touch all these things like the touch deprivation, everything. That stuff that gets onto my podcast because I'm sharing what I'm learning that week.
Right. So if somebody was, what would be the one thing that you could recommend that would have the biggest impact on somebody financially? And I'm sensing that's going to go to the emotional side, but what would you say is the one thing that would have the biggest impact on somebody's life financially that they could walk away with some action item?
Love yourself.
Mm.
If you love yourself and take care of yourself, money will be part of that equation.
Wow. So the question then is, and this may be little bit too much for this podcast, then how, when people say they love themselves or hear love themselves, they often think about going to spas and going out and buying lavish gifts and, you know, and doing some of those things. I'm having a sense that that's maybe part of it, but that's not really at the core of what you're talking about.
No, you got to change that stuff that's going around in your head and stop criticizing yourself. When you love, accept, acknowledge, and appreciate yourself, that will be mirrored back to you by the world around you. And one of the ways that people show their love, acceptance, acknowledgement, and appreciation is by handing you money.
Wow. Powerful. Joan, I can't – this – I mean, I'm sure we could go on for hours and hours and hours, and I – thank you again so much for your time. Please take a little bit of time now and let people know how they can get a hold of you, your website, what's the best way to track you down for your books, your courses, all of that.
Most of the stuff is right there on prosperityplace.com. That's my main site. And I have to put a little graphic up there for my Udemy course. The Udemy course right now is Financial Freedom Formula, a holistic blueprint for success. And the one I'm coming out with next is Simple Meditation for Busy Entrepreneurs. If you do a search for Joan Sotkin, you're going to find me. I'm the only Joan Sotkin in the entire world. So,
and I'm going to put links to all of these.
Okay.
You're on my blog post where I post this podcast as well. So just in case somebody wants to write it down, I just wanted to make sure that they had the opportunity to hear it directly from you.
As a matter of fact, I'll send you a coupon code so that people can get my course for $10.
Wow. Thank you. Wow. Talk about prosperity. Awesome. There's some money income right there for everybody.
And Joan, and people are liking the course and I'm feeling great about the whole thing.
Joan, thank you again so, so much. I really appreciate your time, your information, your knowledge. The book is fantastic. And I'm just going to send everybody over there to pick up some more information about this relationship between emotions and money. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me and for asking such wonderful questions.
Thanks for listening to the Warrior Mind podcast. If you like what you heard, please tell your friends and subscribe at warriormindcoach.com/podcast. Also, make sure you sign up for the Warrior Mind newsletter and check out our blog at warriormindcoach.com/blog. Until next time, live with courage. And remember, every facet, every compartment of your mind is to be programmed by you. And unless you take your rightful responsibility and begin to program your own mind, the world will program it for you.
I am not a warrior. Very soon.